This is Your Life, Season 1, Episode 6. Welcome to This Is Your Life with Michael Hyatt, where our goal is to give you the clarity, courage, and commitment you need to do what matters. My name is Michelle Cachette, and I'm your co-host today. I'm sitting in the studio with Michael Hyatt. Hi, Michael.
Hey, Michelle.
One of your blog readers recently left this comment. For me, the biggest obstacle to blogging is knowing no one will read it.
That does tend to throttle the enthusiasm.
Of course, I say that and I'm like, true, absolutely true. That kind of makes it a little bit more less exciting to sit down and actually spend hours crafting a blog post. And I totally feel his pain. I've been blogging since 2008 myself, which isn't as long as you've been doing it, but it does feel like a really long time.
It does, yeah.
And I can't tell you how many times I've had the exact same thought. So we write this great stuff, but we can't force people to read and to comment. However, there are factors within our control that we can manipulate or change, mistakes yes. we can avoid in order to increase our blog readership, increase our list, whatever it may be. So that's what we're going to be talking about today, because we want our readers, when they actually land on our page, to hang around for a while. Actually, we just even want to get them there sometime.
Exactly.
So have you ever had that frustration in the past? I mean, I know right now you don't have an issue so much with readership, but I'm sure when you started, this was a real factor.
Well, first of all, it's kind of like the old adage, you know, you can never be too smart or too thin, or you could never have too many blog readers. So mm-hmm. no matter where you are, even at my level, I wished I had more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because if you're writing because you want to make an impact, you want to make an impact on more. Making an impact on more people is better than making an impact on fewer people. But when I started out, we talked about this, I think, in another episode. It took me 4 years before I was getting more than 1,000 readers a month. And so I really had to find in the midst of that why I was writing, because I obviously wasn't doing it for the numbers. And part of it for me was that I was trying to find my voice. I was trying to settle on the right content, figure out what my expertise was, what I had to offer. And that just took a while. So, yeah, I know what that frustration is like, to post something and then to be refreshing your page every 5 minutes to see if anybody's commented. And then the disappointment when you can get through the whole day and you don't have one single comment. You're going, is anybody reading me? I mean, my mom stopped reading me.
You know, so. No, that's always a bad sign when mom stops. Well, and sometimes it really is our issue. I mean, right. it really is. Sometimes we make mistakes that we can avoid. That's really very, makes it very prohibitive mm-hmm. for those out there that are searching for great content to actually connect with us. So let's talk for a minute just about some of those mistakes. What we're going to do today is we're going to talk about the top 10 blogging mistakes. And top 10, I'm sure there might be even more than that.
There may well be,
yeah. But we're going to talk about the top 10, many of which these sins I've committed.
Me too.
Have you done
every single
well?
One of them? Every single one of them.
Good. That's very... By the way, how long have you been blogging now?
2004. I was kind of blogging before that, but it wasn't blogging software. I noticed that when I started changing out posts frequently on my website or started putting a different lead article that it garnered more traffic. But I started with Typepad in 2004. That was my first official foray into blogging.
Okay. Nice. A former Typepadder.
Yes. Seth Godin is still on Typepad. So they're alive and well.
All right. Sounds good. Okay, so let's watch through these mistakes. What's the very first blogging mistake that you see?
Well, the first one that I see is you don't post enough. And here's how that script runs. People get enthusiastic. I don't care if you're a corporate executive, a business owner, an agent, a writer, an author, speaker. You get all excited about blogging because you see the potential of the platform. And you probably start with a lot of enthusiasm. You may blog 3 times the first week. Some people go crazy, blog 5 times the first week. And then as you don't get the engagement you want or don't see the readers that you want, then that begins to drift off. And so if you don't post often enough, you're not going to develop that loyal following. And that's what it takes. It takes that consistent, to borrow a metaphor from Jim Collins, pushing the flywheel and continuing to push it before you develop enough momentum that it begins to move on its own. And so not posting enough is the first mistake that I see.
Now, early on, or I mean, even when I started blogging a while back, it seemed to be that if you posted more often, you got more engagement. And by more often, I mean maybe every day a week. But yeah. I've kind of seen that it seems to have changed a little bit, that audiences don't always expect every day. Have you noticed that change? Or
yeah, well, this is where I think I've matured in my view of this over the last several years. But when I first started blogging, I was very irregular. I mean, it wasn't, you know, sometimes it was two times a week. Sometimes it was three times a week. Sometimes I'd go a couple weeks without blogging. Then I got into this thing where I discovered that the more I posted, the more traffic I got. And so then I made this commitment one time that I was going to post 90 days in a row. So every single day, 7 days a week,
wow.
90 days in a row, just to see if I could do it. It was like the best thing that I ever did.
Really?
It was
why is that? Why?
Because
that just sounds like a heart attack to me.
I know. It was really tough. But once I got the momentum and got in the rhythm, first of all, I was looking at the world all the time looking for blog posts. So I was noticing everything. Everything was a potential blog post. I was like one of the guys that, you know, you buy a digital camera and now all of a sudden you start looking at everything in life as a potential photograph. Right?
Yeah.
And you start annoying your family and they go crazy, like, put the camera away. Well, same thing with blogging. And so when I got in that groove, it really did help me. But honestly, it was too much for my audience. Then I backed it down to 5 days a week, so Monday through Friday.
Okay.
And I did that for several years. By the way, the entire time had a full-time job while I was doing that. So I was doing this on Saturday mornings primarily, and then occasionally early in the morning. But while I had my family.
Saturday mornings, you were writing all your posts
yeah.
on Saturday morning? Wow.
Yeah. So, and I'll tell you why here in a second, why that was possible. But and then I did really a scary thing. I realized that after I made the leap and went pro and I was out there doing this full time now, I thought, I'm spending way too much time blogging. I can't create any product. I can't get ahead of the curve because I'm writing 5 original posts a week. So I did a really scary thing. And I said, I polled my audience, which in this particular case was of no use at all. Because some people said, do not stop blogging 5 days a week because I just like the regularity and the stability of being able to wake up in the morning, there's your post.
Okay.
And then I had some people say, you know, it's about time that you throttled it back because I can't keep up with you. You know, the stuff goes into my inbox. I don't delete it, but I don't read it either. And I'm way behind and I feel guilty about that. And I'm probably going to unsubscribe. So I said, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go to 3 days a week. And one of those is going to be my podcast. So it's essentially going to be Monday and Friday's original content. Wednesday will be my podcast. And that's all I'm going to do. And I was scared to death. Now, this was at a time when most of my revenue was coming off of advertising. So my page views would have a direct economic impact on me if they dipped. So I did it. And in the first 2 weeks, they dropped by about, my overall page views dropped by about
20%. 20%, which is a pretty significant number.
It's a lot. It really scared me. And so I said to a mutual friend of ours, Brian, I was kind of lamenting all of this with him. And he said, you know, I think you should just hold steady and see if it bounces back. And sure enough, about a week later, it all came back and then continued to grow. Same trajectory. It's grown steadily since then. So I cut my workload by, what is that? What's the math on that? 40%?
Yeah, cut out two out of five.
Mm-hmm. So I cut my workload by 40%.
And the podcast you're still doing, but as far as writing original content, you're only doing 2 posts.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So it cut it significantly and it didn't have any impact. And Tim Ferriss calls this minimum effective dose. Have you heard him talk about this?
Yes. And or so maybe I've heard you talk about him talking about this.
Okay,
but yes, I do know the concept.
Yeah, so the concept, for those of you that don't know, the concept is you don't need a higher dosage than what it takes to be effective. So for a good example that he gives is water boils at 212 degrees. And so you don't really need to boil it to 213 or 215 or 220. That's wasted energy. And the same thing was true for me. I was now getting the result with 60% of the effort. Same result, 60% of the effort, and it freed me up to do even more stuff that I wanted to do. Picking the right schedule is important.
Did you notice any, once people kind of adjusted to the schedule, did you have any fallout with your readers, customers?
No.
Nothing at
None.
All? No comments, really?
None. I would say overall it was positive. There were a few people that said, you know, I'm kind of sad you're not blogging every day. And then both those people got over it. And then, that was a joke.
Thanks,
the guys on the camera laugh, but you didn't laugh.
Thanks for cueing me on the laughter.
Thanks for showing up. So what I feel like now, Michelle, is that what's more important than the number of times you blog a week is the consistency.
Okay.
So if you pick once a week, and that's perfectly fine. That's a perfectly
acceptable
goal.
That's what I do. Okay? I subscribe to the once a week because that really is doable for me.
Do you do it on a certain day every week?
Typically Tuesday, Wednesday.
There's no day called Tuesday, Wednesday.
In my world, on Planet Michelle, Tuesday, Wednesday is a day.
Okay.
It's ish. It's like Tuesday-ish. Come on.
Okay, so listen, I'm going to catch you some slack on that. But let me tell you why it's important. If you pick a day that you are consistent. Now, I wouldn't say ironclad consistent on that certain day, but it has to be every week if you pick that frequency.
Okay.
And here's why. The most important thing you can do as a blogger or building any kind of platform is to build trust, because without trust, sales don't happen. Even if you're only selling a point of view, you've got to build the trust to be able to do that. The way you build trust is by showing up and being consistent. And you know how it is. We all have that flaky friend that like misses the appointment or they're always late. And it kind of dings their reputation with us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't trust them. You know, we're a little suspicious. But then there's that friend that is always there, is always consistent. You know, we just have trust for that person. So as a blogger, that's what you want to do. Show up consistently, regardless of the day of the week or how many times you blog. Consistency is more important than frequency.
So basically what you're saying is my Tuesday, Wednesday-ish schedule means that I'm your flaky friend.
No, because you're showing up once a week. It's just not always okay. Quite on the same day.
But that, I mean, I totally agree with where you're coming from. I mean, it's a promise you're making.
Yeah.
And when you tell people you're going to be there, it's a promise. You need to keep it.
But, you know, you've got a complicated life, as we've explored here many times.
Well, the post, yes. So the point is to write content, be consistent. And but the first mistake is you don't post enough. So, if you're not going to write for 2 months, you're going to notice a drop in your readership. That's just what's going to happen.
Yeah,
if you don't show up for even a couple of weeks, it happens. So that is one of them. What is the next mistake?
Well, the next one is the mirror image of this one, and is that you post too much. Now, this often happens when you go out with a great deal of enthusiasm, like I was talking about before, and you just flood people's inboxes or you flood people's RSS readers with too many posts. Now, there are some posts out there, and I'm tempted to unsubscribe them, but Mashable, I subscribe to Mashable. Uh-huh. Mashable has multiple, probably a couple dozen posts a day.
And they kind of ping out throughout the day.
Yeah, they're kind of, you know, like, mm-hmm. just like it kind of kills you to keep up. But I keep subscribed to it because there's always some interesting content mm-hmm. in there. But there's some other sites where I've had some friends that experimented with posting multiple times a day, and it was just too much. And I think there were the people, even when I was posting 5 days a week, just said it's too much. And I would say that over time, over the last 3 years, I think people's tolerance for the number of posts has gone down. In other words, they can't handle as much content.
Because there's more out there
all
the time.
Yeah.
I mean, there really is. So being sensitive to that is very yep. important.
And so the trend now is to be more thoughtful and be more thorough, but with less frequency.
Okay, so now let's talk about post length, because that can yep. be a mistake as well.
Well, I think when you're just starting out and maybe you're not a writer, the thought of doing 250 words may be kind of daunting.
Mm-hmm.
I used to advocate, in fact, I think in my book Platform, I say, you know, the sweet spot is about 500 words for a blog post. For me, I can bang that out in a little less than an hour, usually. Sometimes I get stuck and it takes a little bit longer. But that's not a bad length. The trend I have seen, and the reason I'm hesitating on recommending that anymore, is that some of the most trafficked posts out there, the ones that get the highest organic search from Google,
mm-hmm.
are the ones that are the longer, more authoritative pieces. So like I'm talking even 1,200, 2,400
really?
Words. Yeah. So I wouldn't be afraid of those.
That surprises me, because I find that as our attention span is going down, seems to be shorter and shorter all the time, that people don't want to camp out for that long. But
they don't, but unless it's a really authoritative piece that promises to be kind of like, you know, the Bible, the thing on whatever it is. Like I just read one from Social Media Examiner this week. I think it was today, in fact. They always do these authoritative pieces where they were talking about 4 new resources for creating images on your blog. And it was pretty long. It was probably 1,500 words.
Okay.
I mean, I devoured it. And I saved it to Evernote because these were tools that I was excited about.
So it was practical. It had a great title, which is part of it, too.
Yeah.
That that title captures your attention, gets people engaged and bought in. And then I would imagine that it wasn't just long copy, that they broke it up and had,
totally.
You know,
they broke it up with images and with action items and with links and other things that kept it interesting. Yes, definitely.
So we've gone through three of these 10 blogging mistakes. You don't post enough. You post too much. Your post is too long. What's the fourth mistake that you see people making?
The fourth one is not inviting engagement. I hear people complain all the time, bloggers especially, that they're not getting enough engagement on their website. And by that, they mean either they're not getting the social shares that they would like, or they're not getting the comments they would like. Now, what I'm going to tell you is not a silver bullet. This doesn't work in every case, but it'll work better than it has worked if you'll try that, and that is to simply ask people. As you begin to build trust with people, they naturally want a way to reciprocate. They want a way to be able to give back to you, and for you to ask them to say, hey, if you found this helpful, would you please share it with your friends, and then make it easy for them with Twitter or Facebook or LinkedIn or whatever it is, use social share buttons. And ask a question to invite them into the conversation. Web 1.0, back in the day, you know, late 90s or so, was all about a monologue. You know, I post stuff on my site. I don't invite or ask for response from my readers. I just post it. Then Web 2.0 is all about this engagement. We've come a long ways beyond that now. But it was about engagement, about a dialogue. And so one of the best ways to do that is to ask, see yourself as the person who has the privilege of starting the conversation, but you don't have to finish the conversation. So I intentionally leave holes in my post. I don't say everything about the post that could be said because I want to leave room for my readers to share their experience. It's kind of like if you had a dinner party at your house and you set up the conversation at the dinner table, what we're going to talk about. Well, then if you launched into a soliloquy, you know, about that topic, how boring would that be for everybody else?
Where everybody else is just expected to sit there and listen to you.
And be polite, and they kind of yawn.
Nod.
And then they, you know, look at their watch, and, you know, it's time to leave. So instead of that, you can set it up by kind of framing it and maybe telling a story or two, whatever, and then invite people into the conversation with an open-ended question. So not a yes or no question, but an open-ended question, and invite them to comment. And some of the best content on my blog is in the comments.
And that question, I found too, just with experimenting on my site, that the more kind of practical or down to earth that question is, the more likely you're going to get response.
Yeah.
So if it's a question that asks a big question, you know, something that's
global.
Huge question. I mean, that's too much for people to then dive in and participate.
How would you solve the problem of evil in the world?
That's
probably too big.
That's not a good way to close your blog post. Mental note. So find that question, make it kind of practical or down to earth, something that they could easily want to respond to. Okay. You don't invite enough engagement. What is the fifth mistake that you see bloggers that make?
That's you don't participate in the conversation. Now, to continue our dinner analogy, it's like if you invited a lot of people over for dinner, you stood up after the dessert was served and said, hey, tonight we're going to talk about such and such. And you asked the question, so you did all that beautifully, like we were talking about in the last mistake. And then you just left the house.
Bye-bye.
Yeah.
While everybody's getting ready to answer, you just turn around and walk off.
You just turn around and walk off, and you're nowhere to be found.
And none of us would do that in a social situation, and yet on our blogs, that happens.
It happens all the time. You know, somebody says, gosh, I've given all the time I can possibly give to this in just writing the blog post.
We hit publish, and then we split.
And it's like inviting people over to your house and not being present when you're throwing a dinner party.
That's so, such a great analogy right there. I mean, you just painted such a beautiful picture of exactly what happens
when
you do that.
Good. So instead, what you have to do is participate. Now, here's what it doesn't mean. This would also be equally annoying if I felt like I had to comment after every comment. Now, imagine the dinner party again. Every time somebody comments, you keep interjecting yourself and feeling the need to kind of have the last word. After a while, people are looking at you like, okay, this is socially awkward. You know, where did you learn these skills?
Not to mention the fact that you appear very dominating or on top of everybody else.
It's all about you. So what I try to do typically is comment on the first several comments of the day to kind of get the ball rolling, let them know I'm present, that I haven't checked out, I haven't left the room, I'm still there. And then I disappear. And then I'll comment maybe once or twice throughout the day where I think I can add value. Now, honestly, I shouldn't still be doing this, but I do. I read every comment that comes into my blog. Even though I have community leaders like you, I don't read every, I mean, I do read every comment, but I don't respond to every comment. And I also don't do that in the social world, either social media world. So on Twitter, I don't respond to every mention or Facebook. I just can't.
Now, what about, I mean, not everybody has 100 comments a day like you may have. So what about the person that's only getting 2 or 3 or 4 comments? Would you encourage them to respond to all of those?
Well, I think that you can in that situation because it's like having a small group discussion. I think where it gets awkward is when it's more people.
You just so it would make sense to interact with all, you know, if you're sitting with 3 people, you would interact with all of them.
You would.
Okay, so that makes more sense. But once you start having, you know, 100 comments, we don't need to hear a reply to each one of those.
But see, like one of the things you're really good at, I've noticed this on my blog as a community leader, is that you won't always comment with your own thoughts. You'll sometimes ask that person a question to try to drive the conversation deeper. So everything you've ever learned about being a good conversationalist applies here in the blog world as well. We were talking with the crew before we did this episode, totally unrelated, but it does relate here, about Dale Carnegie's book, How to Win Friends and Influence People. All that stuff applies in the web world. In fact, those guys, they had to do a version of that and apply it just to the online world. That'd be pretty cool.
That is true. And I would say it's probably more important in the web world. When we leave comments, it's there for a long time. I mean, it's not just like a conversation that evaporates into air once you walk away and you're done with the conversation. It's documented. It's in print.
Yeah.
You can go find it later. So it's important we learn those skills in that venue as well. Okay, you don't participate in the conversation. That was the fifth mistake. So let's move on to number 6.
Okay. And this is you don't make your content accessible. And what I mean by that is that you've got to provide the content in a way that your customers, your readers want to consume it. So, for example, I go to a lot of blogs and I'd love to subscribe to that blog, but there's no way to subscribe to that blog because they either don't have a link so I can subscribe by email or by RSS. Real simple syndication is what that stands for. If you don't know what that is, that's okay. But that's how I read most of the blog posts that I read. And a lot of times there'll be no way to do that. And sometimes I go to the more sophisticated marketers and they're trying to build their email list, so they remove the RSS function altogether. I think it's a huge mistake. It's a self-centered mistake. Because I know they're trying to build an email list, but it's not about me as a blogger. It's about them as readers. So I need to make it accessible to them so they can consume it in the way they want to consume it. And I've experimented a lot of ways with this. Earlier this year, one of the things I did was I wrote my blog post and then I recorded it. I think I was using a service called SoundHound, but I actually read the blog post and then put the audio file at the end so that people that would rather listen to the blog post. But the truth was nobody was listening to it. So it didn't work. So it was a failed experiment, but that was okay.
Right, but it was worth trying to see.
And it was my drive to make it accessible and easy.
Now, okay, so on this particular mistake, let's talk about something else. So there are times where people have a website and their blog is hidden within the website somewhere. So they have truly a static website and then they have additional page where they have that content. And sometimes it can be hard to find. So even if you are someone who does that, that needs to be accessible or clear or easy to find as well, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. That's got to be in the top navigation so that people can see it. And by top navigation, I mean the menu items at the very top of the blog. And part of accessibility also is keeping that simple. I've seen these menu trees that are unwieldy. Outrageous, you know, multiple levels. I mean, nobody can follow that stuff. It's just because you haven't done the hard work of thinking through it to simplify it.
We don't want to make people work for it.
That's right.
I mean, really, we don't. We want to serve it up to them,
make it as easy
as possible. Now, do you have any preference or advice for those who might be considering a web versus a true, you know, like mine's a blog, you go to my website and the content is right there. And yours is the same way right now as well. But I've done both. Is there one that you recommend over the other?
Nope. I will say that for me, I'm about to switch where my homepage at michaelhyatt.com is a static page that introduces you to my brand and the full array of offerings that I have.
Okay.
But that's because I'm at a place where there's no other way to do that in a way that makes sense. But my blog will be hanging off that main site.
But there's no right or wrong, just personal preference. So, but the point is that if you have that blog hanging off of a website to make it sure it's visible and easy to get to, that they don't have to work for it.
Well, a lot of people, your regular readers, probably won't be coming back to your blog very often. Hate to say that, but they don't.
Mm-hmm.
They subscribe in whatever format you make that available, and then they don't think about it. It's coming to them. It's being pushed.
It's delivered to them, which
is,
talk about accessibility. That's what we want for them. Okay, mistake number 7.
Mistake number 7. And this is huge because you won't get read if you don't figure this one out. And that is you don't create catchy headlines. Headlines are everything because the way people read today is they scan. And for people who are scanning either in their inbox or in their RSS reader, all they're seeing is the headline. Imagine you walk into a bookstore. Remember those?
Vaguely.
So if you walk into a bookstore and you're looking, let's say you go into the business section and you're trying to find a business book, there'll be a certain number of those books that'll be what we used to call in the publishing business, or what they still do, I assume, call in the publishing business, face out. You know, the front of the book was out.
Mm-hmm. Rather than the binding.
That's right. But so 95% of the books that are on the shelf are spine out. You know, so just all you see is the title of the book. And so we used to say to ourselves, we've got to get the title right, because they're not going to see this really interesting graphic and this beautiful design. All they're going to see is the title.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing is true in the blogging world. All people are going to see, most people are going to see, is that headline. If the headline doesn't compel them to click and go deeper, they're on to the next thing. You have a couple of nanoseconds to live before they bounce to the next thing. So it really is worth your time. If you're serious about blogging, if you really want to get traffic, if you want to build an audience, you've got to get great at writing headlines, which means you have to study a little bit of copywriting. And a couple resources I've recommended in a lot of different contexts are copyblogger.com. That's a great website, but they have a resource called How to Write Magnetic Headlines, which we'll link to in the show notes. And then David Garfinkel's book, what is the name of that book? Advertising Headlines That Make You Rich. And it's kind of a cheesy title, but it's a bunch of templates that he deconstructs and explains why they work, gives you a lot of variants of each of those headlines.
You actually use that, don't you?
I use it like a desk reference. So like when I'm stuck, I'll flip through it and I'll say, okay, will that work? No, okay, will that one work? And I just keep trying until I get it right.
Until you find the right template that works for what you're writing.
That's right.
So what about those that do, you know, your posts are very more linear. They have, you know, usually 3 points, 7 points, or 5 points, whatever it may be. So it's really easy for you in your title to say, like this podcast, for example, that these are the top 10 blogging mistakes that you can avoid. But there are some people that their blog content is more narrative or story or something a little different that's not going to necessarily have that. So is there one set template for doing headlines, or are there different ways to do that?
The best advice I would give there, and I don't do that kind of writing, so I'm not the best expert to ask on that. But I would just say you've got to write from the reader's perspective. What's in it for them? I can tell you another thing that doesn't work is the clever headline that requires explanation. Like, it's really cute if you got it. But you, like, if I could explain this joke to you, you'd laugh. You know, that's no joke at all. And the same thing's true with the headline. If it's not intuitively obvious the first time I see it and it doesn't require somebody explaining it, it's not going to work. You know, so it's got to create, it's got to have a promise. It's got to create intrigue. It's got to do something that pulls people into it. Even, I would say, for those more narrative blog posts, what's in it for the reader? Because, like we were talking about in another episode, people are tuned in to WIIFM. What's in it for me? And if you can't tell them quickly in a headline, you're not going to get read, period.
I heard Dave Ramsey make a quote the other day. I think it was Dave Ramsey, but he said, at the end of the day, we're not selling, we're serving.
Yeah.
And that's really what comes.
That's right.
That's what it comes down to for this, too, is that when we write headlines, we're serving. So we got to keep that in mind.
Because we're being respectful of their time.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't have the time to figure it out what the heck we're trying to say. You know, help them.
So now we've talked about the frequency of our posting. We've talked about the length of our posts, about the engagement, the headlines. Let's actually talk about content. You know, we think, and it's true, our content, what we write in our blog posts, is a really key part of whether or not our blogging is successful. So let's start talking about that. What are the mistakes that you see within the content?
Well, one of the first ones is just that first paragraph, sometimes in journalism called the lead is weak. You know, it's it just doesn't connect, because once they read the headline, the next thing they're going to read is that first paragraph. And if you don't clearly articulate the problem you're trying to solve, or the issue you're trying to address, or the benefit to the reader, or just something that's just so curious that it makes them want to read further, that first paragraph is critically important. Now, every other paragraph has got to keep people moving through it as well. But that first one is, you know, kind of the most important of all of them.
So that eighth mistake then in this list of 10 would be that your first paragraph is weak. Do you have any suggestions? I mean, when you sit down to write, how do you immediately have something strong to open up with, or do you write the post and then maybe go back and fix that first paragraph?
I often go back and fix it, but I try to write it like this. I try to write it as though that's all anyone was going to read, and I've got a hook or teased them into reading more.
Okay.
And so usually in WordPress, I use a plugin called All-in-One SEO. This is all the SEO I do. I don't do anything fancy, but I just have this plugin. And there's a paragraph description that gets posted with it. And that first paragraph is what I'm writing for that, because that's all the search engines are going to see. And that's all a lot of readers are going to see who see a summary of it. So I want to get that right.
And that's what you end up using as that first paragraph.
But I don't want to give it all away there either. So I'm going to create the intrigue that makes them want to click through to get the rest of the story.
So some intrigue, but yet you don't want to have them completely lost, but you give them content enough to kind of like an appetizer to get them to the table, make them hungry without making them full.
Yeah, and I hate to say this is kind of maybe a negative analogy, but it's like a fishing lure. You know, you've got to pick the lure that's going to get the most fish to bite on it.
Okay, got it. Okay. Ninth, we're on number 9 here on our top 10 list of blogging mistakes. What is number 9?
9 is your topic is off brand. You know, you're not focused enough or niched down enough, and you're kind of writing about everything, and therefore you're writing about nothing. And I did this in the early days too.
Mm-hmm. Which in some sense, you know, when you're an early blogger, part of developing as a blogger is to just get out there and write.
And
right?
It is. And find
your
niche,
find
your expertise, all that. And all that's fine. But at some point, you've got to exercise the discipline of saying, just because I can comment on everything or just because I have an opinion about everything doesn't mean I can write about everything. So, for example, this will be shocking to you, I have political opinions. But whenever I try to write something political, it totally blows up in my face. It's just something I stay away from.
Well, it's not in keeping with your brand either.
It's not in keeping with my brand. It's off topic. People don't come to me for political opinion. There are political bloggers out there, and that's fine for them to blog on because that's, in fact, what people are coming for. But not for me. It's off-brand, and I've got to exercise the discipline of staying on brand. I recently, like a week and a half ago, had the unfortunate experience of I did it on Facebook. I didn't do it on my blog, but I threw out a political thing. Totally backfired.
Not a good idea.
Not a good idea.
But you won't be doing that again anytime soon.
Well, I said that the last time before I did it the last time. So every couple of years, I kind of think, okay, I can do this and it'll be okay. And in this one, I even tried to actually put it under the umbrella of leadership. So I was kind of, you know,
Trying to make it fit the brand.
No.
Just don't go there.
No, I'm just not going to go there.
Tell you what, if you have the urge to do that again, you just call me, let me know, and I'll talk you off the ledge. Okay, let's get to our last one on our top 10 list of blogging mistakes. What's number 10?
Number 10 is that the post is about you. Now, this is tricky because you actually do want to use your own stories, your own personal anecdotes, what you've experienced, but there's always got to be in that story that you're telling what I call the pivot, where you turn the story to the audience and you make it relevant to them. If you don't do the pivot, it's mostly narcissism or it's a personal journal. You know, it's not... You're not writing to serve your audience. You're writing maybe for self-expression, to cast it in the best possible light, or you're just totally fixated on yourself in the worst possible light. But the pivot, where you turn it to the audience and say, have you ever been in that situation? You know, and then you start making it relevant to them. So you're telling the story to serve as a point of connection, to create empathy, again, to build trust. But then there's got to be the pivot. Can't be all about you.
Well, thank you, Michael. For those of you who are bloggers out there, your blogging is a very unique signature to you, and where you invest your time and how you handle that can really determine how successful you are and how many readers you get. And I know you're not spending all this time blogging because you want only your mother to read. So one of the keys, as Michael has walked us through today, is to avoid some of the most common mistakes with blogging. If you've enjoyed today's conversation, you can get all of the show notes and the full transcript of this entire episode at michaelhyatt.com. If you missed any of those 10 mistakes or you want to go back and review them again, you can find all of that in those show notes at michaelhyatt.com. In addition, if you'd like to watch the recording of this episode on video, we have that posted on Michael's website as well. Any other thoughts on this topic?
Yeah, I would just encourage people who are listening to pick 3 of these and to flip them around and make them a positive. Like, here's how often I'm going to post. Here's what I'm going to do to write better headlines. You know, here's what I'm going to do to write better leads or better first paragraphs. So give yourself some action assignments and really drill into this. And you'll be amazed at how quickly the results will improve.
Mm-hmm. And rather than all 10, maybe today you can just start with those 3. Good advice, Michael. Thank you for joining us today. It's been our pleasure to have this time with you. And until next time, remember, your life is a gift. Do what matters. On the next episode of This Is Your Life, Michael and I will review the book Essentialism by Greg McKeown, and we're going to talk about how doing less is the best way to do more.